Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hi, folks. Thanks for tuning in and listening to this segment of the show featuring 1989 Open champion Mark Calcavecchia. Mark's a wonderful friend of the show. He's a great follow on Twitter at Mark Calc. His wife, Brenda, also a wonderful follow on Twitter at Brenda Calc. Take a listen to this segment. I hope you really enjoy it. And make sure you tune in every week. Tuesday nights, we record the show. It's available for you as a podcast on Wednesday. Anywhere you get your podcasting content, we're out there on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our friends over at Good Pods, and I thank them so very much. They've been very good to me in the show. They featured us several times. Download the app. You can find all of your favorite podcasts available over there on Good Pods. Thanks for tuning in and being the greatest listeners in podcasting. I want to start things off by reminding you about the Macklemore. It's a private resort located just south of Chattanooga, high atop Lookout Mountain, Georgia. It's a casual two-hour drive from Atlanta and Nashville and Birmingham. The existing Highlands course is now ranked in the top 100 courses you can play in the United States by Golf Digest. The 18th hole is ranked in the top 10 finishing holes in the world. A second course, the Outpost, is now under construction and will open summer of 2024. That Outpost is another Bill Bergen, Reese Jones designed and features a mile and a half of dramatic cliff edge, which every inch of that cliff edge is filled up with a golf hole. They've got a world-class hotel, Cloudland Lookout Mountain Curio Collection by Hilton, will open spring of 2024. Both have incredible views into historic Macklemore Cove, 1,200 feet below. You gotta see it to believe it, folks. Stay, dine, and play golf above the clouds at Macklemore. Go online to Macklemore.com to book your stay and play package today. And let's talk about grips, folks. I want to remind you about our friends over at Lambkin Grips because every shot has its own unique feel. The trick? Feel comfortable with each one. And comfort is built into the very DNA of Sonar Plus Black Grips. Let's talk about our connection to the club, folks. And let's talk about our friends over at Lambkin Grips because every shot has its own unique feel. The trick? Feel comfortable with each one. And comfort is built into the very DNA of Sonar Plus Black Grips. Composed of their Genesis material that provides supreme comfort and durability, while their fingerprint technology creates a strong connection and unforgettable touch. The game changes from shot to shot. The feel in your hand shouldn't, though. Lambkin. Feel is everything. I also want to remind you about the all-new Stealth 2 driver from TaylorMade. If there's one thing we know golfers want from a driver, it's distance. But there's actually two things we all want. Distance, and let's not forget, forgiveness. That's why TaylorMade designed the Stealth 2 driver with even more carbon for even more forgiveness. To learn more about the new Stealth 2 driver from TaylorMade, visit TaylorMadeGolf.com. Okay, now and next on the tee with me is 1989 Open champion Mark Calcavecchia. Let me remind you about Mark's background. He's from Laurel, Nebraska. His family moved to West Palm Beach, Florida when he was 13. He won the Florida High School Golf Championship in 1977, played his college golf at the University of Florida from 1978 to 1980, and was named All-SEC in 1979. That season, Mark won the Furman Invitational. He turned pro in 1981, got his first win on the PGA Tour at the 1986 Southwest Golf Classic. Mark has one of the lowest scoring rounds to par in PGA Tour history. He finished 28 under, a four-round total of 256 at the 2001 Waste Management Open, which featured a second-round 60. At the 2009 Canadian Open, Mark set the record by making 9 consecutive birdies during his second round. In all, Mark has won 13 times on the PGA Tour, including that 89 Open Championship at Royal Troon in a playoff over Greg Norman and Wayne Grady. He's won 4 times on the Champions Tour. Over the course of his career, he has 193 top 10 finishes, 351 top 25s, and he's a great follow out on Twitter, at Mark Calc, and I'm thrilled he is back with me again tonight here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Mark, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me. Always good to be on the show.
I appreciate you. So, Mark, since we last spoke, you had both knees replaced, and you were telling me you actually went out and played 9 holes a few days ago, which is fantastic news. How are you feeling?
I did, yeah. I had my left knee done in November, November 1st, and my right one at the end of January. So that's been 10 weeks on my right one, but they're feeling pretty good. You know, they get stiff and whatnot still, but it doesn't hurt to hit the golf ball, which is good. I'm starting to walk further and further each day, so I'm just now trying to build up strength in my thighs and my calves and whatnot. So other than that, I hope to get back out and start playing again on the Champions Tour in a few months.
Yeah, are you still looking to get out there this summer? When do you think that might be?
Yeah, I'm shooting for the Principal Charity Classic in Des Moines, which is one of the tournaments that I've won on the Champions Tour. I love Des Moines. It's a great Midwestern city. It's only about 4 hours from Laurel, where I grew up, so it reminds me a lot of home. And just the golf course is a little quirky. It's kind of old school and kind of hilly and a little bit goofy, but it seems to suit me. I've had a lot of good events there, plus the win. So that's what I'm shooting for the first week of June.
Mark, switching gears a little bit, I want to talk about the Masters. Your wife, Brenda, actually posted an article about something I had no idea that you started, and that's the tradition of skipping the ball across the pond on 16. She said you actually got reprimanded a little bit for doing that. What's that story?
Well, my buddy Ken Green took most of the heat because, you know, he was easier to yell at than me. when Ken and I started hanging out in the early 80s on the PGA Tour, you know, we did a lot of weird things, hitting skip shots or ricochet shots or, you know, trying to chip it in the sink in the hotel room and just all kinds of weird stuff. So, of course, we're playing a practice round. My first Masters was in 87. His was in 86. He was actually leading the first round that year. But anyway, so we get to hit 16, and he says, "Cuck, let's hit a skip shot. I'll bet you a beer or whatever I can get on the green. And, you know, whoever hits the green gets a beer." I said, "Okay." So we gave it a shot, and I think we hit a couple of them. And didn't think too much about it. It was fun. The crowd liked it. And then that was on Monday. We got to the course Tuesday morning for a practice round, and Ken had a letter in his locker from Horde Harden. It said, "Ken, we don't do that here at Augusta National." And that was pretty much it. So, of course, 16 holes later, 15 holes later, we get out there, and we're like, "Well, what do you think?" I said, "Heck yeah, we got to give it another shot." And anyway... and we did, of course, we did it again Wednesday, and everybody started following suit after that. So yeah, we were the inventors in 87.
Wow. So how did it all come about where everybody else started following suit? Did you guys talk about it and tell the story about the letter? And did they say anything else the second or third day when you kept doing it?
Yeah, I think all the above. I think the guys playing behind us saw us do it. Guys walking down the hill on 6 saw us doing it, and the crowd was kind of getting into it. And, I think it just kind of caught on as time went on. And, of course, I think the news got out that Ken got a letter, and everybody thought that was kind of funny. And the fact that we kept doing it. After that, I think the very next year, of course, we're out there doing it again. And noticed every single group was hitting skip shots. So that was it.
As a major champion, do you still get invited to go back to the tournament and play in the par 3?
You know, we can't play in the par 3 anymore. We still get invited to come back to the tournament as an honorary invitee, but we're not allowed to play practice rounds or the par 3 anymore. For years, you know, like the past amateur champions like Buddy Alexander and Buddy Marucci and some of these guys they'd literally play 36 holes a day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and play the par 3. I don't know if they kind of overdid it in that sense, but as time went on, I think the last year, and I actually played Craig Stadler played his last Masters when his son Kevin was in the Masters, and we were there that year and played a practice round with those two guys. And I think that was the last year, whatever year that was, that they allowed you to play the par three and play a practice round.
When you played in the par three, did you ever play really well and then accidentally on purpose hit one in the water, get yourself DQ'd because you didn't want to have to deal with the curse?
No, actually, I completely choked and hit it in the water. I was in a playoff with Nick Price, and I just kind of fanned a wedge. The playoff was on started on number 8, and I wanted that trophy pretty bad. And I just kind of whiffed a wedge right in the pond, and that was it. So hit another one, hit it on the green. He hit it in there pretty close, and they just shook his hand and said congrats, and walked back up the clubhouse. Didn't even walk down to the green. So. Yeah, I was a little bit bummed out, but I was definitely trying to win that thing.
As you mentioned, 87 being your first Masters, you finished tied for 17th that year, which is pretty solid for your first time at a Masters tournament. What was that week like? And did you pick anybody's brain to kind of learn about the course and where you needed to hit it and all that sort of thing?
I'm pretty sure I played a practice round. Ken and I played with Ben Crenshaw, and I can't remember who else, but you know, Ben's certainly one that was that knew those greens like the back of his hand, and he was the guy that we kind of ask, you know, where do you definitely not hit it, you know, if you can avoid it on pretty much every hole, to give yourself the best chance to two putt or make a par. So, and no doubt that helped, and you know, and just the course was just, you know, it's the Masters, it's Augusta National, and it was. Obviously, before they did all the renovations and made it longer and this and that. So it was kind of the way it always was. And, you know, I really thought it was a really good course for me. Even though I hit a fade, there's really only a couple holes where it really helps to hit a hook off the tee. And 2 and 10 are really those only two holes where you got to hook it.
So do you remember your first drive up Magnolia Lane?
Actually, I do. I do. I was excited, but slightly underwhelmed. I just kind of thought, well, this is kind of cool. You can see the clubhouse up there, and it's a bunch of magnolia trees, and you know there are leaves and junk all over the ground. It wasn't like there were bloom or anything. I was like, okay, it's kind of a road with trees, but yeah, no, it I do remember, and it was cool. And of course, you know, when you pull up in front there, and you know, your wife and your family and your caddy and your buddies and everybody else is piled in the car. There's about 8 of you jammed in there, and everybody pops out. And then your buddy, my caddy, you know, took the car down to player parking. So that was always kind of fun to get out right there in front.
You come back the next year in 88 and you're chasing eventual winner Sandy Lyle for 4 days. You're actually trailing him by 5 shots after the 7th hole on Sunday. 6 holes later, you're leading by 1. Things change pretty fast at Augusta National in a final round. What was it like? What was that swing like for you?
Yeah, they sure do change quick there. It was, my motto always there. And over the years, people have seen the front nine. My motto was always just get me to the eighth tee, the par 5. If I can get there even par through the first 7, I'm happy. You know, I'm thrilled about it because I knew I could play the last 11 holes. And that's kind of what I did on Sunday. And it was a tough week weather-wise. It was pretty windy. You know, the scores weren't low at all. I think Sandy finished at 7 under and I was 6 under for the week. The greens were, I remember 9 green on Friday was a combination of green and purple and yellow. I think like 6 guys 4-putted the 9th green.
Wow.
So it was pretty wicked conditions. But anyway, yeah, once I think I birdied 8 and 10 and 13 or whatever. And all of a sudden I looked up and I was right there. I was tied for the leader, 1 ahead. And then I'm pretty sure I just parred the last 5. I made a couple of decent par putts on like 5-footers on 16 and 17. And then the one shot I've always said in my career I wish I could take back was I hit a beautiful drive on 18, and I tried to smash a wedge And I thought if I hit it absolutely perfect, it's going to be right on the number. And I hit it really good, but not perfect. And it hit the false front and spun back. And I completely forgot about the back slope in the middle of the green, you know, where I should have hit a 9-iron and tried to at least get it up there and use the slope and have it come back. So I had a putt at it. But anyway, I hit a great chip and tapped it in for par. And then, of course, the rest is history, with Sandy Lyle probably hitting the greatest fairway bunker shot right along with Matt Fitzpatrick last year at the Country yeah. Club hole to win a major. But, you know, Sandy hit a beauty and got it up there, and it rolled back down the hill. And, he poured the 10-footer right in the middle.
So I want to talk about a couple of the shots you just made mention of, because you had about a 5 or 6 footer for par on 15. You drained that putt and you walked off that green pretty demonstratively. I imagine the adrenaline had to be pumping at that point when that putt curled in.
Oh yeah. You know, there's nothing like, I was still young and I'd only won a couple of tournaments, leading up to that, but I was really playing well and I was pretty confident. And, you know, just that whole scene there, when you're standing on top of the hill at 15 and see all the people and the water and the green and 16 and whatnot. It's, I remember in 2001, when I was in the second to last group, Tiger won, John Wood was caddying for me, who does TV now. Of course, he caddied for Hunter Mahan for years and Cooch and pretty much everybody. He caddied for me for a few years, and he just said, look at this, would you? I mean, it was just a view that I'll never forget. I just kind of took a picture of it in my head. It was just cool. So, that's the spot you want to be. And, to make nice 5 footers for pars on 16 and 17, it was huge. And then, then Sandy made birdie in 18, but it was, it's my favorite tournament to watch all year. There's no question.
Your tee shot on 16 was a little bit long and left. They had another tester for par there. You make that one, as you said. And rewatching that final round, I did that this morning, and I thought, when that putt on 15 and then the one on 16 goes in, it just, if I was in the moment in this and I didn't know what the outcome was, I would have thought, Mark's got this. I mean, everything is just sort of going his way. He's making the testers. Nothing seems to be bothering him. He's got a one-stroke lead. When you walk off 16 going to 17, did you allow yourself to get ahead to think, I think I got this one?
You know, Chris, I actually did. I knew that, I had 17 and 18 left and hit a good drive on 17 and a nice, not sure what it was, probably a 9-iron in there, about 15, 18 feet, just long left of the hole. The pin was kind of over on the front right or the right side, and I knew it was fast. And I literally just tapped this thing, and that one buzzed by about 4 or 5 feet as well. And I was thrilled to get that one back in the hole. So, and then, of course, 18 just sets up perfect for me off the tee, and I just told myself to do what you've been doing, and I blasted one right around the corner. It was perfect.
And you mentioned a moment ago your second shot, and you come up just a little bit short, and you hit a wonderful little chip shot. For a moment, it looked to me like that thing was going to curl in the hole, too. You sort of tap your heart a little bit. Did you think that was going in, or were you relieved that it stopped that close to the hole?
No, I was relieved I didn't have to make another tester on the 18th green. I knew I could make that 6-incher. So, that was a relief. Obviously at that time I knew where I stood. And actually when I was playing 18, I was one ahead because Sandy was just on 16. And, he made that putt from off the back of the green there as well, going down the hill for birdie. So, and then by the time I got done, signed my card, they rushed me into the Butler cabin over there, just left at 10T, and said, Sandy just hit his tee shot on 18 in the fairway bunker, fairly close to the lip. And I sat down and I watched it, and I said, well, nobody in the world hits it higher than he does. And, he was on a little upslope. I said, it's a tough shot, but I was talking myself into it. I said, just don't worry. He's going to make a par. Don't think you're going to win this thing right now. Get yourself psyched up for a playoff. And then, of course, he hit the fairway bunker shot. And he jumped out of there, and his eyes were about as big as baseballs. And I knew he hit an amazing shot the second he hit it.
Did you? Obviously, you know, the talk on the broadcast was, could he get it over the lip and all of that sort of thing. And when he hit it, I didn't necessarily think that this ball was going to end up right near the hole. And obviously, like you say, the rest is history, and he did. But I got to imagine you were thinking we're going to be in a playoff here. There's nothing worse than a playoff. And then when he hit that shot, brutal.
Yeah. You know, and his ball actually stopped on the second tier there for about 3 seconds. And then it started trickling back down. It could have stayed there, hit a ball mark or something. So we had to roll back down the hill, but and once it started moving, then I told everybody in Butler cabin, no, he's going to make this. He's such a good putter. And, you know, his putt, I've watched it 100 times at least. It kind of zigzagged its way down there. It kind of went a little right, then kind of a little left, and then it zigzagged, and then it went a little right at the end, right in the middle. And I was like, oh, well. And, you know, and then I remember being in the press room afterwards, and even though I was disappointed, I said, well, you know, obviously I'm disappointed, but you got to give Sandy Lyle 100% credit. He birdied the last hole to win the Masters. And, I said, this is only my second Masters. I'm going to have about 20 more chances to win this thing. And, I said, I was pretty sure I'd get a green jacket one day. Of course I never did, but that was my attitude at the time, that, I just gave him full credit and was looking forward to coming back next year and hopefully winning it, the next year.
We know you finished second, obviously, that year. But last week, we learned that you finished second again to some guy who's on the Today Show. You apparently lost in a playoff to that guy. I can't believe I've never heard about that. What's that story?
That was funny. Somebody sent that to me because I didn't see it live. Carson Daly had a green jacket on, and he had like some sort of like fake-looking master patch on. And Hoda and Savannah were giving him grief, and they're like, what'd you win the Masters or something? He goes, yeah, matter of factly, I did. I won the 1988 Masters over Mark Calcavecchia in a playoff. And Craig Melvin starts laughing. He goes, Calcavecchia, we pulled that one out of the archives. So I thought it was hysterical. So I thought my week's made. I got a shout out on the Today Show for losing in a playoff.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
That was.
I want to get your thoughts. You mentioned the 0-1 chance. You know, 13 years later, you get yourself right back in the mix in the final round. You actually birdied number one, Tiger bogeyed. Yeah. So it was you, Tiger, and Phil tied at that point. David Duvall would get in the mix in the back nine. But what do you remember about having a second opportunity to win it?
That was probably the worst thing that happened to me was birdieing one, because all of a sudden I realized I was tied for the lead in the Masters, and I really didn't do much anything the rest of the day. I played average at best and didn't make any putts. I think I shot 72, but it was a perfect day. There was hardly any wind, so the course was there for the taking. But I just kind of got ahead of myself a little bit, I'll admit, and got a little bit nervous. You know, obviously it happens. It happens all the time, in big tournaments. And, that's kind of what happened to me in 0-1.
So I want to get your thoughts on this year's tournament. Brooks Koepka was, you know, critical of play, it seemed like on the Sunday in the final group. He was talking about how he and John Rahm seemed to wait on every shot, and he blamed it on the group in front of them, which was Victor Hovland and Patrick Cantlay. And even Hovland's patience seemed to wear out. There are several shots of him playing ahead of Cantlay, walking ahead of him, and all that sort of stuff. I think trying to give him a message that we need to pick it up here. I think there was about a hole and a half between the group in front of them. Talk about, you know, in a major tournament like that, how much does slow play and getting on your nerves play into your ability to play well and stay focused?
I think in this case, it really hurt Brooks because he is a fast player. And it was slow. I mean, it took like 4 hours and 40 minutes to play the last round in twosomes. You know, I know it was a tough day. There was some wind out there and guys were struggling in spots. But, you know, Phil shot 7 under, Spieth 6 under. I mean, they were good rounds. But, yeah, Patrick Cantlay's slow. But I saw a scan across the Golf Channel today, and he was being interviewed over in Hilton Head and said, you know, we fell behind a little bit, but then we waited on our second shots in 15, and we waited on our second shots in 18. So at the end of the day, you know, they didn't finish behind, but it is frustrating when you're anxious, number one, and you're ready to pull the trigger, and you're looking at the guy standing out there for 2 or 3 minutes trying to figure out what club to hit. And it's hard, and I do think that bothered Brooks quite a bit.
Did you ever, without naming names, if you don't want to, I mean, did you ever have to deal with guys in front of you, slow play, you know, start to think about, hey, where's a tournament official? Where's somebody that can get in these guys' ear to pick this up? Because it looks like we're headed for a 5 or 6 hour round here.
Yeah, it's definitely bothered me at times throughout my career. There's no doubt being that I'm a very fast player. But, you know, as time has gone on, you know, I realized there's really nothing you can do about it. If the tour officials haven't done anything about it by now, by, you know, slapping 2-shot penalties on guys for taking 2 or 3 minutes out there to hit a, and Spieth took three minutes to hit a shot the other day. I couldn't believe it. You know, some guys just, they won't pull the trigger until they're 100% ready what they're doing. And, it's just kind of a lingering chain effect. And it's hard on the faster players, but also I think everybody's come to realize that's just the way it is, and you might as well just not worry about it.
So that stuff aside, what'd you think about what you saw from John Rahm over the last, you know, 30 or so holes on Sunday?
I thought going into Sunday for sure that Brooks would win based on the way he played, even the 7 holes and the horrible weather on Sunday, or Saturday morning, rather, before it got canceled. But then I also realized that once, you know, he missed his putt when they came back and resumed Sunday morning and Rahm made his, the 4-shot lead was down to 2. You know, but then Brooks kind of hung in there. He was always kept his 2 or 3 shot lead the whole day and you know, had a 2-shot lead going into the last round. But that 3-wood that he hit out in the middle of the 9th fairway on 1 was shocking. And it didn't hit a tree to get over there. It just took off over there. It was just dead left. And I thought, oh no, that's not a good sign, even though he made a par. And, you know, and actually Rahm made a slippery little 10-footer there for par to stay 2 back. So, and then Rahm made that downhill left to righter slippery putt on 3 for birdie to get with 1 in 1. And I knew at that point it was, you know, Koepka wasn't going to win by many if he did win. And as the round went on, it just looked like he was a little bit uneasy, and it just never looked like Rahm was going to falter, especially on the back 9. You know, I just didn't think John was going to make any bogeys, and he did. And he played great.
Mark, the LIV players seemed to be welcomed back nicely. Phil got lots of cheers. Brooks and Rory talked in their press conferences earlier in the week about seeing each other frequently. They practiced down in the same area there in Jupiter. Could the whole notion of a rift between the players be, as some guy said, all media driven? Because things seemed to go just fine.
No, I knew things would go over very smoothly. You know, and evidently Phil didn't say hardly anything at the past champions dinner. And a few guys might have been a little more quiet than usual. I also noticed Phil got 0 TV coverage the first 2 rounds, even though he was 4 under par. You know, they never mentioned Patrick Reed until they had to. So it was a little weird. But as far as the guys getting along and mingling, I mean, no, I wasn't worried about anything going on there at all. You know, they And I had no problem with those guys playing on the LIV Tour and taking the money. And I think guys in the PGA Tour are happy they're still there. It didn't surprise me at all that everything went really smoothly.
Mark, before I let you go, you've done such a great job over the years of, you know, being one of the fan favorites out on both the regular tour and then out on the Champions Tour. Just as you wind down your playing career, how much longer do you want to play and how much have the fans buoyed you over the years?
I got a few boos here and there.
Not buoy. I mean, like buoy as in raised you up or made you feel good about you.
Well, I did get a few boos too, but the fans have always been great to me. You know, there were times that I acted like an idiot, and I realized that, and I shouldn't have. But obviously, as I've gotten older and mellowed, and really enjoyed playing on the Champions Tour, you know, I hope to play a couple more years. I my knees are getting healthy, my back feels good, so hopefully I can kind of get back into contention and have a chance to win another tournament out on the Champions Tour. But I've also noticed without, you know, I've only played 9 holes in 7 months. The longer you go without playing, the harder it is to come back. And, you know, I've had a few days where I could have sworn I was going to go to the course and said, ah, screw it. I'm going to watch Netflix or something, you know? So, but no, I've always appreciated the fans and, a lot of nice things that people say about me on Twitter and in social media. So it's greatly appreciated.
Mark, before I let you go, remind our listeners again how they can stay up to date with you, all the great things you're doing, and look forward to you being back out on the Champions Tour, hopefully later this summer.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Mark Kalk, at Mark Kalk, and my even funnier half, Brenda, my wife, is at Brenda Kalk. She's on Twitter as well, so give us a shout.
Mark, I appreciate you very much, my friend. Thank you for coming back and being a part of the show again tonight. Look forward to catching up with you and Brenda again a little bit later on this summer.
Always, Chris. You got it. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Mark.
So,
that is the great Mark Kalkovecchia, folks, and a wonderful player, obviously. You don't win majors and get in contention in majors without being a wonderful player. But one of the things that I appreciate most about Mark is just what a great guy he is. I've enjoyed every moment that I've had him as part of the show. Tonight was the 6th time, already looking forward to the 7th. And like he mentioned, his wife, Brenda, is a scream. She's hilarious. I had the privilege of having her on the show late last summer, and I look forward to getting that opportunity again, I hope real soon.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.